The Cappuccino Podcast brought to you in association with Tactical Solutions. For all your tactical solutions, check them out at www.tactical.co.nz.
It's that time again, so grab yourself a cup of joe
and get ready for the Cappuccino with Constable Brian.
Okay, so my guest today on the Cappuccino podcast, first time in a wee while coming back, is Anjali Mulari. She is a New Zealand ice hockey ice fern representative. She plays forward in that team. She's been a New Zealand inline hockey player and representative as well as being a coach. She's got a Bachelor of Science in Biochemistry. She's a postgrad diploma and forensic scientist. She's a wife. She's been an emergency communicator. She's been an analyst. She's currently a fingerprint officer trainee, and we'll talk about that. She's just recently returned to the ice ferns after 5 years due to the fact that she had, two passengers on board, being a mum, and something called COVID, where at the International Ice Hockey Federation Women's World Ice Hockey Championships Division 2B, the Ice Ferns came third, and Anjali, small-time achiever that she is, broke the most points in the game by scoring a goal with 7 assists versus Croatia, finished with 11 points from 4 games, topped the tournament's assist table, and was the only top 10 point scorer from New Zealand, and was the MVP for the game versus South Africa too. Oh, and also on the odd occasion, she's also a fashion model as well. She's also been the assistant coach of the New Zealand Inline Ferns and one of the founding coaches at Hockey Wise as well. Geez, that's a resume and a half, Anjali. Welcome to the Cappuccino podcast.
Hi, Brian. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, look, my absolute pleasure. And first of all, I've got to say this, even though I've said this to you plenty of times on social media, big congratulations to you and the rest of the Ice Ferns teams. You guys and girls, because I know there are some guys involved, are bloody legends. There's no other way of putting it. So congratulations.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, we had a really good time.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, despite getting out through storms. But that's another story for another day. All right. Now, I know that you may have listened to the podcast in times prior. What we always do is we do the speed round dedicated to what I think is the world's greatest police movie, which stars Keanu Reeves in it, called Speed. So here's your pop quiz hot shot. So I'm going to give you 7 random quick fire questions. So first is, as you know, we normally record this in the car. So Anjali, if I was with you in the car, what would your coffee order be?
Soy flat white.
There you go. Favorite ice hockey player is who?
Oh, that is a hard one. Probably Jamie Jones.
There you go. All good. If I could represent New Zealand at another sport, what would it be?
Does inline hockey count?
No, because you've already done that. So it's one that you completely random.
Completely random athletics.
There you go. I was thinking maybe underwater hockey, but hey, look, that's all good. Your greatest of all time, any sport, any code, the person that inspires you is who?
Would have to be, at the moment, would be Zoe Hobbs.
There you go. I was going to say, I've tried for you, Dr. Helen Murray, but it didn't happen. Any superstitions when you play hockey?
No.
There you go. One of the things that really grinds my gears is what for you?
Grinds my gears? Honestly, I'm pretty easy going.
There you go. That's all right. That's all good. If I asked your brother, would he say the same thing, though? That's the question.
No.
There you go, right? Okay, yeah. If you had a theme song for when you scored a goal like they do in the NHL, what would your theme song be?
These are hard. My theme song. We had a song in our team a while ago, and it was the That Girl Is On Fire song.
There you go. Take it. No worries. And your favourite NHL team is who?
Probably the Maple Leafs, because we went to their home rink.
As a Calgary Flames diehard fan, it's a tragedy, but we'll just move on from that very quickly. And I've seen the Maple Leafs, and it's a great stadium, and they are a great team. So you start playing inline hockey at the age of about 11 years of age due to your brother. right? How did you get into it? Because let's be honest, most siblings, when their brother turns up and says, "Hey, I'm playing this great game," go, "Yeah, whatever, good as gold." But for somehow you got the bug and you've taken it to sort of the next level. So what was the big attraction?
For me, I went down to watch him play for the school, and I just thought I want to give it a go. I didn't really do a whole lot of roller skating before that. I kind of knew like how to stay upright. But once I started playing, I think, yeah, I just really, really enjoyed it. So that kind of just kicked it off, and I joined the school team as well and went from there.
Yeah, and you're pretty unique in having a school that actually had an inline skating team, aren't you?
Yes, definitely. My brother's good friend was Michael Atwell, who's in the Ice Blitz. So he was on the team with my brother, and I think he kind of started the team because he played for the club. And then yeah, there were a couple of teams to play against in Hamilton, but our school league has always been pretty good here.
So by the age of 12 or 13, you are clearly showing some promise as an inline skater slash hockey player because you joined the Hamilton Devils, right? Where you lead the
Yes.
Devils to a number of national champs. You've been a captain of a number of times for the Hamilton Devils too. How sporty were you at school? If I said to your classmates, "Hey, Angeline Mullary is going to be a New Zealand rep in two sports," would they have picked themselves off the floor after they'd started laugh after they'd finished laughing? Or would they have said, "No, we could always see that she was always going to succeed in something"?
Definitely the latter.
Yeah.
I played a lot of sports at school. My dad always talks about when he came to watch me when I was about 5 or 6 at athletics day. I'd win the 100 meter, won the cross country. I don't know. I think it just came naturally to me.
Yeah.
Definitely not a long distance runner now, but
Yeah.
I do enjoy sprinting. So yeah, that's why I said athletics earlier.
There's nothing like a good line break in the game of hockey, which is almost the same. So hey, look. So somewhere in between of all the success for the Hamilton Devils, at the ripe old age of 17 years, you start playing ice hockey. Now, lots of inline skaters in New Zealand do this, as well as overseas, I guess. But for New Zealand, it seems to be this natural transition from inline hockey to ice hockey, back to inline, back to ice. So how did you discover hockey, ice hockey, and who was the person that led you to sort of your very first game? Because, well, let's be honest, it's a bit of a weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I knew there were more opportunities with ice hockey. Coming from like this inline hockey background, I knew there were world championships for inline, but we'd never attended one. But I knew of the Ice Ferns attending world championships, and that was just became a goal of mine and a dream to go to a world championship. So I knew at that moment in time it wasn't going to be with inline, but more likely ice hockey. So Tara Tissink, a good friend of mine, she played ice. I think there weren't too many people playing ice in Hamilton at that point because it was a bit of a drive up to Auckland. It wasn't as easy as it is now. It was down to one lane a lot of the way, and it did take almost 2 hours. So yeah, it was a bit harder to get to the ice rink, but I made it work. And yeah, I definitely struggled a bit with ice skating at first, because it is a bit different to inline skating and like learning about the edges and things. So it did take me quite a few years to feel confident ice skating. I always, because I think it was quite intermittent with not being there all the time. I struggled every time I went onto the ice, but it's definitely a lot easier now. But going back and forth between ice and inline, there are some things you have to kind of relearn pretty quickly, for your memory to come back on how to like tight turn and that sort of thing. But once you've done it over and over again, it becomes second nature.
Yeah,
But
so I guess.
going back and forth, yeah, people do struggle, especially like just little things like the weight of the puck and shooting. There's a number of different differences that you have to quickly adapt to when you start.
I guess the
Yeah.
obvious question there for you is, what's the most horrific injury you've had in either?
I've actually been pretty lucky, touch wood. No real major injuries. I've had some problems with my shoulders, but bruises, yeah, nothing too major, thankfully.
That's all good, and let's hope that that continues as well. So keep touching that wood there. So for all the overseas listeners, because I've got listeners in Calgary and in Toronto and Edmonton and all around Canada as well, do you want to tell us, Anjali, how many ice hockey rinks there are in Hamilton, New Zealand?
Zero.
And apart from you, I think there was in the latest sort of Ice Ferns team, you had a reserve sort of standby goalie, and those were the only two representatives from Hamilton, weren't there?
We've had a couple of girls come and go from Hamilton. There's been Hannah Jensen, who plays in line with me now. Jana Kivel also plays in line with me. But it seems to be not something people stick to year after year because it does get expensive and it's a big commitment. So yeah, there have been a few people from Hamilton that do have played for the Ice Ferns. But yeah, year after year, no one consistently.
Apart from
Yeah.
yourself, obviously. So
Yeah.
after, can you remember what your very first game of, I'm going to say hockey, but for other listeners, we'll call it ice hockey. What was your very first game of hockey like?
You're talking about ice, you're not in
Yeah,
line.
I'm talking about ice. Yeah.
Well, once I started going a couple of trainings, I joined the Auckland team pretty quickly. We went to a tournament back in 2010. We didn't have a women's national league at that point. We just had a women's national tournament, and it was just a couple of games over a weekend. It was in Gore. And that was the first time I'd played some proper ice hockey games. And probably the biggest difference for me was learning about the offside rule. In inline, we don't have offsides. And also the 3 20-minute periods, because inline it's only 2 20s. So yeah, a little bit of a longer game and also offsides. I remember tripping over the blue line a couple of times, trying to wrap my head around the offside rule.
As a Canadian friend of mine once said, he said that blue line's magic, it stops the poachers.
Yeah.
So you have
Yeah,
to.
in line sometimes I like to hang around at the end of the
So after just a few months of playing ice hockey, you make the Auckland women's rep team, like you said, in 2010. And then given the fact that Auckland is, for overseas listeners, 90 minutes there and 90 minutes back, at any stage, did you question your sanity and your ever escalating petrol costs and why you were doing this?
No, I was still thankfully young enough for mum to be paying for things at that
Nice. Yeah, good work. I hope mum's got your
point.
bronze medal somewhere in her lounge. That's all I'm saying. So you go on to win four national titles. You were the alternate captain in 2013. In 2016 and 2017, you break all the player records with your 70 points over a 12-game season. That's one hell of a start for somebody who's only just sort of a couple of years ago picked it up. Was it just something that came natural? Like you said, you've been 40 naturally, but let's be honest, ice hockey doesn't come naturally to a lot of New Zealanders, particularly those who have sort of a fairly athletic base, because you've actually got to be fairly graceful as well as a bit sort of muscular at times as well, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of it comes down to starting with inline, and having quite good hands. Like I can move the puck quite well. And that seemed to be a different style from a lot of the people that had only played ice hockey. Yeah, it seemed to be a bit of a different style. So yeah, my hands I've definitely benefited from, and my speed. I think that just came from the young age of always liking like sprinting and that sort of thing. But definitely inline has helped with having quite good hands, and being able to get around players. And that it's been a trend, I would say, from watching the inline players come over to ice. You can see that their hands and their movement of the puck a little bit stronger than the people, some of the people that only have purely played ice hockey. I'm not sure why that is. Maybe it's something to do with inline being a smaller rink and having to navigate around people without having as much space. I'm not sure, but has been a trend that the inliners can move the puck quite well.
It's not a bad thing. So, well, this is all going on. So you've got national, international reps in both inline and ice hockey. And you're in sort of your late teens, early 20s. You're also studying for your bachelor's degree in biochemistry at Waikato University. I've got to ask the question here now then. Are you a planner, a scheduler from hell? How did you juggle it all? Because, I mean, there's massive time constraints there. I mean, it's crazy. How did you manage to plan it all?
It did take a lot of planning. I was fortunate enough to gain the Sir Edmund Hillary Scholarship for university, and that was a huge help because we could reach out to different resources and get endorsements from people if we needed help with rescheduling exams and tests at university. There was one time I remember quite vividly, I went over to Italy with the Inline Ferns to play the World Championship, and I had a clash with my exam, and they said, "That's fine, you can sit it in Italy during the tournament." And I said, "Okay." And actually, Helen, because she worked for the university, she was my what's it called, supervisor or whatever for the exam. So she watched over me for 3 hours while I sat my exam in Italy, and then she scanned all the papers and sent it back to the university. So there were definitely times where there was a lot juggling. I had an exam a few days later that they agreed to push out by a few days so I could fly back and sit the second one. So yeah, definitely a lot of juggling. But I think if you're determined enough, you can make it all work.
Yeah, she is a great New Zealander, that girl, Helen. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, she's incredible. Yeah, she's a
Yeah.
really good friend.
And it causes a great amount of mirth and sort of sideways looks at me when I talk to people in Canada and say to them, one of our lead researchers in CTE research, amongst other things, also happens to be an ice fern, so ice hockey player, which they'll just look at and go, "Are you serious?" So, yeah, she's
Yeah.
an incredible lady. So
She
just sort of
really is.
so that people have got some idea, what's your inline skating kit worth? For you to play at international level, how much does that cost you from sort of your skates up all the way to your helmet? What are we talking for you to be completely kitted out, how you want to be kitted?
Inline. So the inline skates are probably about 500 or 600. Depends what you like, but mine are probably on the more pricey side. And then you don't have shoulder pads or padded shorts, but you have the same shin pads, elbow pads, gloves, and helmet and stick. So it's quite similar to ice hockey, I'd say. It would be all the gear together would be probably close to 2,000 if you're buying the top of the line stuff. Yeah, so with my hockey bags, very similar. I just take out my shoulder pads and my padded shorts and my ice skates if I'm going to inline, and just put my inline skates in.
And your ice hockey kit would be roughly about the same price, or well,
Yeah,
obviously
I'd say
more.
so. Yeah, my ice skates, I just got some new ones actually. They were close to $1,200.
And the problem with
But
what's always got
yeah.
here is the shipping from Canada and the United States, isn't it, to be honest?
Yeah, although these skates, I've got some people that were over at an inline hockey tournament picked them up for me from the hockey shop there
Boom.
in Vegas. So that worked out well.
That's all, always good, always good. Now, the question I've got to ask then now, I guess, is how did you manage to afford it as a university student? Like you said, you got the scholarship, which would have helped to certain things, but like most hockey players when they start off, did you scrimp and borrow and hey, look, you're a size nine sister, so am I. Can I borrow your skates for this game? Or were you pretty well kitted out?
I was really lucky to have my mum's support from when I first started. She paid for a lot of things. Yeah, it's not a sport that you can do with no money, unfortunately. She paid for a lot. I didn't have the top of the line stuff when I first started out. The stick was probably the most important to me. I like a light stick. And quite specific. So that one, yeah, from the beginning, I had pretty good stick. But other than that, it was all just mid-range stuff. And yeah, my mum really lucky to have my mum's support from a young age. I wouldn't have been able to achieve any of it without the money.
Magic, that's awesome. All right, so this being busy thing is a common theme. When I looked at you and researched some of the stuff that you've done, it's a common theme for you, isn't it? It seems to me like you can't just sort of do one activity and just go, okay, I'm good with that. There's about four or five things going all on at once in your life. How do you relax and what do you do to cope with the stress?
How do I relax? I like watching Netflix if I have time. My husband will probably say I don't cope with the stress, but I just try and fit things in where I can. Things always come up. Like at the moment, my son, I had to pick him up from daycare yesterday because he's sick. But little things like that, you just have to be adaptable, adjust accordingly. I was just trying to do a question on my assignment before this podcast, so it's just fitting things in wherever you can, really.
Yeah, the answer is always C as well on the multi-guess, so just circle C and say Constable Brian says that's all good. Right, so now we have lots of international listeners, many of whom are hockey fans right now. We have four teams in the New Zealand Women's Ice Hockey League. We have the Auckland Steel, we've got the Inferno, we've got the Dunedin Thunder, we've got the Waikato Wild in Queenstown. Is it hard to retain and attract new players to ice hockey in New Zealand?
I would say the money thing is a huge factor. As we just spoke about, it's not a cheap sport. So unfortunately, it's really only for people that can afford it. The ice time itself is quite expensive because there's limited ice rinks in New Zealand. In the North Island, there's two in Auckland and then one in Wellington that's reasonably new. One of the biggest factors is money. I think once people give it a go and if they do enjoy it, I think they do tend to stick around and kind of make it work. A lot of the people on the national team and my team do struggle to afford these trips away. But because we love it so much, we just find the money somewhere. Find the money somewhere. It has grown a lot since I first started. As I said, it was just a one tournament weekend, and it's grown to this four-team league, which is incredible. People do enormous amounts of work around the country to get these teams up and running and off the ground. Queenstown wasn't a team when the league first started, but there's a few people down there like Kelly Nelson who have really pushed for that fourth team in the league, and it has happened. I hope that we can have a fifth team from, say, Wellington or something in the years to come to grow it even more. But yeah, I would say if you find the money and you do love it, you tend to stick around. And there are a lot of young girls that are coming through, as far as I'm aware. I don't have a lot to do with Auckland youth development stuff because I do live in Hamilton. I don't do a lot of coaching or anything. Don't have time. But from what I've heard, there are a lot of kids at the moment coming through, which is awesome, which is so cool.
Yeah, and my good buddy, and I say this as a diehard Auckland Marco fan, but you knew that anyway, AJ Spiller would tell me that the game is in good hands. I mean, all you got to really do is look at your results for the Ice Ferns and then also the under-18s who just won their gold as well in their division. And the game's looking better and better, I guess, for the future.
Yeah, definitely. AJ's done heaps for Auckland ice hockey, especially with the kids. We're so lucky to have people that invested in the sport, and it's the only reason why it's growing. So, all the volunteers do amazing things, and I'm very grateful for all that they do because they help us out as well.
Yeah, and I don't think people actually like me. I go to the rink all the time to watch the Marco play, and I'll be out to see the Steel play as well. I'll be out to have a picture with you and Helen one day, Anjali. All right.
We've got games this season in Auckland, so
I know you have definitely. but there's lots of volunteers there that are doing that for the love of the game. And as always, like most sports in New Zealand, they just wouldn't succeed if the volunteers weren't there. So yeah, you're right. We do owe them a big thanks. Now the Ice Ferns had a great successful trip to South Africa. They won the bronze, and you did particularly well as an individual at the tournament yourself, like we just mentioned previously. Did we manage to qualify and go up a division after the Worlds, though? Because the way it works is, I think a lot of New Zealanders don't quite understand it. It's like you've won bronze, but that's actually in your division. It doesn't mean that if you look at the world rankings, there's USA, or sorry for my friends in Canada, there's Canada, then there's the USA, then there's New Zealand. There's actually sort of a tiered system to the division. So have we managed to go up a division with our bronze placing?
So yeah, this is something, as you're very correct, a lot of people don't understand the tier system. When I say we got bronze, they think we're third in the world, but actually we're probably about 30th. So yeah, it is kind of hard to wrap your head around, but once you've got it, it makes sense. We will not be promoted with a bronze placing. It's a gold or nothing thing, really. Gold, you go up. So Belgium will be promoted, but there is some discussion or speculation around what's happening next year because of Russia and Belarus wanting to come back in, or so I'm not sure, but because I don't know what happened, they're not in the divisions, and so yeah, if they come back, then that will affect the placings. And also North Korea have withdrawn from the women's, I'm not sure about the men's, but it will all affect the placings. And I heard something about Belgium not being promoted, which would be awful for them, because if you win gold, you just expect that, yeah, we're going up, and that's what you're playing for, really. It's secondary to the, or yeah, I'd say the gold medal was secondary to the promotion, because you want that promotion into a higher division. So I'm not sure what's happening next year. We definitely won't be being promoted. We also won't be being relegated. We're in quite a safe spot there in the middle of the division, I'd say.
Oh, that's a good thing. That means there's room for improvement, which is what we're always after with ice hockey.
Yeah, definitely. And it was such a close set of games. We only lost, it was about one goal game with Belgium. We pulled the goalie at the end to try and get a goal up to equalise it, but we got scored on. So the score says 4-2, but it was really a one goal game, and it was a bit heartbreaking when the games are that close and we go down. Because yeah, it was right there for us, and we couldn't walk away with the win. But that's the nature of it, and yeah, we'll move on.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And like, I was watching the games from Canada because the time difference was a bit wonky as well. So I was literally having to speed through to the games, and then sometimes I'd get to the end result and go, ah, rat. So yeah, but like you say, it was a great tournament. There's room for improvement, and the only way's up for the Ice Ferns, I'm sure. Was it weird in South Africa going from the extreme heat outside to a rink inside? Because did it take you a long time to acclimatise and get used to the time difference as well?
Yeah, the time difference is probably the hardest thing for us. Although we had some quite early morning training, so the jet lag kind of helped with getting out of bed in the morning. We were waking up quite early, like some days 3 or 4 a.m. But if we had a 6 a.m. training, then it wasn't too bad. The heat was okay. We're used to having our league here previously. Instead of the winter, we had it in the summer. And so we'd be going from the January, February temperatures of close to 30 degrees here in New Zealand into the ice rink. So we were quite used to the temperature. It wasn't as hot as I expected. It wasn't mid 30s or anything. It was kind of comfortably in the 20s. So it was nice and warm. It was nice to get some sunshine after the rain we've had here. But yeah, no, it was actually okay. The jet lag is definitely the hardest thing.
Yeah. Now, do you get what Dr. Helen Murray gets? And I spoke to her about it on the podcast as well. When you tell people, one, that you play hockey, they automatically assume that it's field hockey. And then you get the, oh, I didn't really spot you for a hockey player, when you actually say to them, you're playing, well, what I think is God's games, ice hockey, because they expect sort of a toothless, sort of bearded Neanderthal to be only an ice hockey player.
Definitely get that. Yeah, when I say hockey, field hockey's the instant thought, and I'm only close to 5'2", so
yeah,
everyone says I'm not big enough to be an ice hockey player, but yeah, I think once you watch a game, you can see how different people have their roles within a team. I'm not a big defender, but yeah, as a forward, I work quite well, I think. I've got a lot of speed, and I bring that to the game. So, yeah, I don't let my size get in the way. Although, it's funny, it's a bit of a joke, really. I always feel like I'm as big as everyone else out there. I don't feel small. It's not until someone will make a comment saying, "Oh, you're so little," but yeah, in the game, I just feel like I'm average size out there, not smaller than everyone.
And I noticed from looking at your players that you weigh in at about 60 kgs, isn't it? So it's not 6 foot 2 and 100 kgs, is it?
Nah, yeah, it's like 55 or something.
Yeah, right. Now, when I mention hockey forwards, most listeners will start thinking of people like Alex Ovechkin, Crosby, Matthew Tkachuk, Connor McDavid. How do I put this nicely for for those gentlemen? A few of them there aren't really model material, but you, as an ice hockey forward, have been. How did that come about? Because you've been on buses, billboards, you've been used in advertising campaigns, you've even been a model when you've been pregnant. How did that all happen?
Oh, it's mostly my husband, to be honest. He does marketing,
Yeah.
so he gets me involved wherever he can, really, because he knows it's good for the sport. He's shown me a billboard at the moment that's circulating around Hamilton for one of his cars, and there's me on it with my ice hockey helmet. I haven't seen it out in the wild yet, but I've seen a picture of it. But yes, no, it comes from my husband.
That's gold. That's gold. I showed some of my friends up in Canada. I said, "Hey," they're like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm researching my podcast, and I'm talking to one of the Ice Ferns ice hockey forwards." And they're like, "Man, we got to come down to New Zealand. Your hockey players are way better looking than ours are, that's for sure." It was a bit rough.
That's
They're
so
like,
funny.
"Hey." So now line changes and the actual effort on the ice is something that a lot of New Zealanders can't get their heads around, particularly. When they're watching a game of ice hockey, it's that thing of, well, you're only out there for a couple of minutes and then you come off again. And what's that all about? And let's be honest, sometimes, well, most of the time, it's not even a couple of minutes. So, to give the listeners some idea, let's say that you're playing for the Ice Ferns and you do a line change, your effort level when you're out on the ice would be equivalent to what physical activity?
It would be something very high intensity. Maybe like you've gone to a circuit class and your mid reps on an exercise like the spin bike or something,
Yeah.
and you're working at that real high rate where your heart rate's quite high, and then you have a break after the exercise for a certain number of seconds, and you move on to the next exercise in a circuit class. It's kind of like that. Where you're working at a very high rate on the ice, and then you get off, have a break, recover, and then do it again. It is different to most of our national sports. We don't really have anything like that. I think in basketball, do they sub quite regularly, or are they out there for quite a while? I'm not quite
You
sure, but.
know, they can sub, but the thing that I think makes ice hockey even more different is the fact that you hit the ice and you'll be going flat tack for, let's say, a minute, and that's a fairly long change. But you're also, so like I've had people say to me, it's like sprinting, but at the same time as you're sprinting, because your stick skills, you might be, doing a figure eight or going five hole on a goalie or something else, your fine motor skills have still got to be in check as well. So you've got lots of things going on there, haven't you?
Definitely a lot to think about. But once you've been playing for a while, you don't really put that much thought into it,
No,
thankfully.
yeah, no.
It's different to most sports, and a lot of people do struggle to understand that. You're right. When I explain it to people here in New Zealand, I think once you explain it, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But it's definitely different for them to understand at first.
I always say to people, look, if you think it's really easy, just go and sit on the bench and you don't even have to be wearing skates. But when somebody just yells out your name, you've got to jump over the sort of the side of the rink there and get onto the ice and sprint as fast as you can. I've yet to see anybody do it. Okay, so now the New Zealand Ice Burn team has, amongst others, a neuroscientist, a firefighter, a fingerprint officer, an electrician, trainee. Do you think that helps you get on better as a unit than maybe just being full-time professionals? The fact that you've got all these diverse backgrounds. I mean, when you talk to people sometimes in professional sports, they say, yeah, a lot of our players have been like nurtured since they've been 12 or 13. They don't actually have that sort of common background or a background where they have to talk to, as you and I would say, regular people. Is that one of the Ice Ferns' strengths, do you think? The fact that you've all come from different backgrounds?
Yeah, I would say it gives us a lot of good life experience, I guess, coming into tournaments. We definitely don't spend as much time together as we would like because of work and school, and just money. If we had, I guess there's pros and cons. If we were all professional athletes, we would get a lot more time together on the ice, and training together, which would definitely help our game, because we have a couple of camps and that's it before we go away to World Champ. But yeah, we all are quite special, really, with all our different jobs that we have and what people are studying. And it does give us a lot of real world experience coming together for tournaments. We do, I mean, it does mean that we have a couple of things to focus on at any point. Like Helen, she has work things all the time. So I don't know if her mind is ever 100% fully on hockey. And I've got kids, so there's that. So yeah, it means I guess we're not lucky enough to be able to just focus purely on hockey, but it does also probably have its benefits, like you say, of real world kind of life experience.
Yeah, and maybe like lots of people will often say about professional athletes, they can't problem solve as well as ordinary everyday people can because they will very often look to the sideline for their coach for advice. Whereas sometimes people who have got a regular day job and have to do other stuff, they can actually make leadership decisions on their feet, I guess, as a collective, as opposed to looking after the sideline and the coach saying, we're going to do this.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely true. We all have our skills we bring, and there are quite a few leaders within our team. There's a lot of players with leadership potential, and I guess we're very lucky to have that, and that possibly comes from our activities outside of sport.
Now, speaking of regular people, because that's what you are in the Ice Ferns, although you're extraordinary on the ice, do you want to tell us how much your trip to South Africa cost? Because I think a lot of people think, oh, that'll all be fully funded and everything else. And it wasn't, was it? You had to pay for yourself.
Yes. So we had to pay 4,000 plus uniform. So whatever uniform you needed, that was on top of it. So my bill was about 4,500. And that's pretty good for what we got out of it, actually, compared to inline. Inline is definitely more expensive. The IIHF, which is the International Ice Hockey Federation, they fund, I think it's the accommodation and ice time and food during the tournament week. So that's for all teams. So we pay for everything else. So our 4,500 covered our flights, food around the tournament week. We did a couple of activities in South Africa. We went on a safari, and we went up Table Mountain, and it also covered our two training camps before we left with flights to Dunedin. So overall it's actually pretty decent, but it is a lot of money. If I add up all the money I've spent on hockey in my life, it would definitely be a house deposit in New Zealand. So it's a lot of money, but it's for something you love, so you get to have all these amazing experiences around the world, and I wouldn't, yeah, have it any other way.
No, not wrong. And I mean, like you say, it's you get to have those amazing experiences. You're lucky though, because you do have some sponsors, don't you? Well, you do. You are associated with some brands. Here's your opportunity, Angelique, to say their names and give them a big thanks if you want.
Okay, give me a sec. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to, I put a lot of time into my fundraising, personal fundraising. And that was because I knew that I needed to. We have kids, and so money is not what we have a lot
No, yep, I hear you, yep.
So, yeah, I put a lot of personal time. I think I took 2 days off work to go around and try and find some sponsors. I've got some sticks from Deja Hockey, who are a company in Auckland that are trying to import affordable sticks for people because they can get quite pricey. Mad Media gave me some billboard space here in Hamilton, and that's what I used as my prize for my business raffle. I thought about this. I ran it past my husband, the marketer. I said, do you think I can make this work? And he said, yeah, give it a go. So I got some billboard space, and I approached businesses door-to-door on foot, and said, do you want to buy a ticket into my raffle? And the chance, you've got this chance of winning a billboard with all the creative work done by Mad Media. So I had a lot of companies. I'll just go through them really quickly. Hamilton Windscreens, here in Hamilton, Narellan Pools, JT Carter Plumbers, TRT, DTS, Grey Consulting Engineers, Hamilton Laminates, Absolute Storage, VCP, Prestige Collision Repair, Waikato Heat Pumps, Dr. Plumber, Waikato Engine Reconditioners, Admiral Boats, Final Touch, Mulford Plastics, Autoway Services, and my local inline hockey rink, Hamilton Inline Hockey Club, gave me the space to do a roller disco as well, which worked out really good. Urban Print made some t-shirts for me. Hockey Wise have been a long sponsor of mine, and Police Sport actually have their initiative where they give national team representatives some money as well. So it was a lot of work. Common Ground also gave me a gym membership to use as my preparation. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of work that goes into it. And Hexaco Threads made us some shorts. It's a really huge effort, and it takes a lot of time, but I managed to get my trip funded. So
yeah,
all the work and time was definitely worth it for me. Yeah, fundraising is a huge thing, and I definitely put a lot of time into it because I know that we need it, and I wouldn't be able to go without that time that I put in. So yeah, I'm very grateful to all the people that helped me get away to South Africa.
Yeah, and again, thank you to all of Angelique's sponsors. Like you say, that you're the perennial underachiever, so I wouldn't expect anything less than you to have organised all of your fundraising and got it sorted. So congratulations to you, and thank you again to all your sponsors. Now, the thing that you mentioned there is, and it's something that you always see with your name, apart from the normal, media who don't know hockey headline here, where you always get referred to as an ice queen, which I always think is a little bit interesting, the Waikato police officer. And when I DM'd you even went, I'm not a police officer. But, you know, you're not. And I said to you, no, you're not. You're right. You're not a police officer, but you are part of the police family. And you are currently a fingerprint officer or a trainee fingerprint officer. You're 3 years or 2 years through a five-year degree?
I'm in my second year, but I've been with the team for 3 years because I had a year off for my second child.
Yeah. So how did you get into the fingerprint officer's role? Because like I said before in our intro, you've been a communicator, you've been an analyst, and then all of a sudden you're like, actually, you know what? I'm going to become a fingerprint officer. It's something lots of people think about, but they never actually get round to it. And it's a lot more detailed and complex than I think a lot of people actually realise.
Fingerprint officer was always the goal, actually. When I was doing biochemistry at Waikato Uni, I looked up some job opportunities and I saw fingerprint officer with New Zealand Police, and I went and did a day with the team here in Hamilton. That was 10 years ago now, and I loved it. I went up to Auckland and had a look around their office, and I decided, yeah, I want to do that. So they said, there's not many job opportunities, but you can do the postgrad diploma of forensic science to have a better shot at getting a job. So that's why I did the postgrad diploma of forensic science. That I did 2 years part-time in Auckland, and at the same time I needed some money. So I got a job as a communicator as a way of getting my foot in the door with New Zealand Police, with the hopes of one day becoming a fingerprint officer. I studied part-time and work full-time as a communicator, answering emergency calls. And that was a really good way of getting to know police and how it all works, and little things like the ranking system and the police values and all of those things. I learned a lot at comms, and then I decided that Auckland is not for me, so I wanted to move back to Hamilton, and there were no fingerprint officer jobs at that time. So I thought about different career options, and an intel job came up. So I moved back to Hamilton, and I put my time into doing the Diploma of Intelligence Analysis. And then we were fortunate enough to get pregnant with our first child, and I took a year off. And while I was on that year off, someone from our team messaged me and said, oh, we've got a job opening, and it's the first trainee position they've had in 10 years in the Hamilton office. And I said, what, really? And I looked into it, and I applied, and I think there were about 120 applicants or something crazy. And I was really lucky to get the job as a fingerprint officer here within Hamilton as well, exactly where I want to be. So yeah, I'm very grateful for the job that I've got. And it's a long road, the training, but I know it will be worth it in the end.
Yeah, now, you're not wrong. Now, I'm no forensic expert, but I have been a police officer, despite the fact I only look like I'm 23, for 20, I think it's going to be 27 years this year, right? When you watch, just so that the general public's got some idea, because I don't want to go into too much detail with what fingerprint officers do for obvious reasons, but when you watch programs like CSI and FBI and all those types of things, do they annoy the crap out of you, or do you get the message that I always get from my wife, you have to leave your brain in park with these TV programs? It's not 100% realistic. I'm like, 100% realistic? It's not even 5% realistic. does it really annoy you?
I wouldn't say it annoys me. I find it more funny than anything. Yeah, it's definitely a lot different. Fingerprints is quite a manual job, and I think a lot of people don't understand that. We have to plot where all the unique characteristics are, and that pattern runs against the system to compare. So yeah, it is, there's a lot more to it. It's not as quick as CSI. But I think those shows have done good things, because it's allowed a lot of people to grow an interest in forensics, even though it's not very accurate at all.
No. I remember talking to an ESR forensic investigator, and she told me that it takes me longer to put my paper suit on and get it sealed up at a serious crime scene than it does for an episode of CSI. So she goes, I'm envious of them some days.
Yeah. That's probably the one thing where I see them walk into a crime scene with nothing on, just their normal clothes. That's quite funny.
Yeah, it is. Right. So how supportive have the police been of your, and this is the only ice hockey joke I'm going to make at your expense. How supportive have New Zealand police been of your icecapades and inline hockey?
Yeah, very supportive. They're a great employer for sport related things. They offer sports leave during tournament week, which is fantastic. I don't have to use my annual leave. And then, like I said earlier, police sport provide a little bit of money as well. And just the fact that my colleagues are so supportive. I think there was one game that was 7 a.m. New Zealand time, and my colleagues, some of them start at 7 a.m. so a few of them were watching at their desks, which was really cool to have that support from back home. I got off the ice in South Africa, and I had a few messages saying, oh, congrats on getting player of the game. And yeah, it's really cool to have that support from everyone in my team. I'm very lucky.
Yeah, legends. Right, so you've been in a few roles in the New Zealand Police, and like you said, one of them has been what a partner of mine often used to refer to as the voice of an angel, i.e. a police communicator. One of the biggest issues you have from people I know that are communicators is that you never actually get closure on matters that you are dealing with. Was that ever an issue for you when you're a communicator?
Yeah, I did find that, because once the police turn up, that's it. You hand them over, phone call ends. I would find myself throughout that day, if it was a big job, just checking back in to see what happened. But yeah, that, I would say that is one of the hard parts of a police communicator. Also, kind of you use your imagination a lot, I found, because you're not there, you're not witnessing it with your own eyes. You just imagine what it could be like. Which I don't know if that's a great thing to be doing. But yeah, the closure thing is definitely one of the downsides of the job. But it's also, you know, you've done a lot to get to that point in a very generally high stress situation for the caller. So you know that you've done your job when that phone call ends, and that's important. If you've done your best job. So yeah, it was an interesting job, and I actually did enjoy it. It was the hardest part was probably the hours of work at the time.
Yeah, shift work is nobody's friend, that's for sure. So I'm going to ask you a question here, and you can decline to answer if you want, but for fear of upsetting one half of your sort of iwi, I guess. Inline the hockey players versus ice hockey players in a hybrid game, who wins? Best out of three.
What game? Like just on an ice rink?
No, just like a hybrid game. Who
would
win? I mean, you know the skill levels in both. So who do you think wins?
Inline.
Oh, there you go. Apologies to the hockey fraternity of New Zealand. Right, so what does the rest of 2023 look like for you, Anjali? Because, I mean, give us some idea, because you've got training that you're still going to need to do. You've got to get ready for the New Zealand Women's Ice Hockey League that starts 23rd of the 6th. So it's not that far away. How much training have you got to do? Because I'm guessing you're going to have to pick yourself up sort of physically and emotionally. You've been to the Worlds, you've done really well at the Worlds, you've as an individual, you've performed brilliantly there. How hard is it to get G'd up again for playing for the Auckland Steel and those hour and a half journeys back up and back home again?
I'm just kind of at the moment planning out my year, just trying to determine what I need to focus on. I do need to put a lot of time into work and study at the moment. So that's my number one priority is work. And then around that, I'll have to decide if I'm going to do ice or inline or both. I have really enjoyed ice since coming back after having kids. I think prior to kids, it got a bit much, I think, with we were losing quite a lot, and it was really hard to pick yourself back up for those games. And I had a few years off with kids, and COVID forced us to have a break as well. And it's kind of reignited a spark for me with ice hockey. So going to Worlds, I had a really good time. And I said to my husband when I got there that I would really like to play the league for ice. So yeah, I'm just trying to determine what I have time for and what I want to prioritize around work. I'm hoping I will play ice this season. Next year's World Champs, definitely something I want to attend. I'm hoping it's in the Southern Hemisphere, either New Zealand or Australia. That would be a dream. Yeah. So it would be cheaper, and also I think we'll have a really strong team if it's closer by. So yeah, we'll see what happens, but I'm just in those planning stages at the moment.
Yeah, as a committed New Zealand ice hockey fan, I beg you, choose ice hockey, please. And my apologies to all the inline hockey.
You need to come and play inline, I think.
Yeah.
You need to watch some games.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know if my ice hockey brethren would let me do it, but anyway, that's all good. Hey, now the question we always ask at the end of the podcast is, the day of reckoning has come for Anjali Mulari. You are lying there in your casket, but strangely enough, you can hear what is being said at your service. What would you like people to say about you? And I've got no doubt there will be a set of inline skates and a pair of ice hockey skates at either end. But what would you like them to say about you when you are no longer here?
What would I like them to say? That I'm kind. I hope people say I'm kind. That's one thing I always try to enforce on my daughter is be kind. And I hope that people enjoy my company. I'm sure there'll be many jokes about all these different things that I do. My captain says I'm really nosy. I always like to know the gossip of what's going on. Yeah. So I'm sure there'll be some jokes about that. But, you know, I hope people say that I'm kind and that I will be missed, I guess.
Hey, where do we find you on social media? Because like you say, there's plenty of sponsorship opportunities for you and the Ice Ferns. Where do people follow you on your social media? Because just the other day, you had a great picture on your Facebook page where you had taken your medal and a few pucks and a few other bits and pieces to your daughter's kindergarten, I believe. So where do we follow you?
So my Facebook is Anjali Malari. It's just my name. You can follow their athlete page. My Instagram is also Anjali Malari. Just look me up on Instagram. You can follow me on there. And I also have LinkedIn. If you're into the professional side of it, feel free to follow me on that. It's just my name. Just my name.
Perfect. And on that note, we thank you very much for your time and for joining us on the Cappuccino podcast. It's been an absolute blast. Keep on doing what you are doing. You're an absolute legend.
Cool. Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
Thanks for listening. But please do Constable Brian and I a favour and be sure to subscribe
so you don't miss out on the next Cappuccino podcast. Real people, real stories.